are listening to Teacher Talk It, supporting teachers, parents and students worldwide. www.teachertalkit.co.uk. Like, subscribe and follow to stay in the know.
Our goal is to teach primary school kids and raise awareness for mental health, but at the same time we're teaching ourselves, so it's going hand in hand.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance and research-based publications.
This week, listen to Ross McGill, founder of Teacher Talkit, interview a range of individuals from Queen Mary's Grammar School in Walsall, Richard Langton, head teacher, Sophie McPhee, PSHE coordinator and program director for Change Your Mind, and students Susan and Sam Raj. In today's podcast, some of the things we'll be discussing are the in-school prioritization of open discussion around mental health, Change Your Mind's origins, structure, and foci, students' responsibilities in Change Your Mind, and its expansion across the UK.
Hello everyone, this is Ross at Teacher Talkit, the most influential blog on education in the UK. Today I'm delighted because I'm joined by four special guests, and I'm revisiting a school that I've had the pleasure of working with a number of years ago, particularly before the pandemic. So I'll introduce those four guests in a moment, but I just want to briefly just give you some facts about the wonderful Queen Mary Grammar School in Walsall. Not only is it one of the oldest schools in the country, founded in 1554, but they are doing some incredible work for mental health, national recognition no less, and this was before the pandemic, and I know that they have been doing some incredible work throughout to support their student community, and I want to unpick some of the work that they've done with Change Your Minds in particular. But before we get into those details, let me just introduce to you who is in the room, or ask them to introduce themselves. So we've got two students, first of all, which is always exciting on the podcast. So I'll ask Suzanne to introduce yourself to our listeners. Tell us what you're studying, what year group you're in, please.
Hi, I'm Suzanne, and I'm in year 12, and I'm studying biology, chemistry and psychology, and I'm part of the Change Your Mind team, and we work with primary schools to try and increase awareness about mental health.
Okay, fantastic, Suzanne. Thank you for joining me. And Sam Raj?
Hi, my name's Sam Raj. I'm also in year 12 and I study biology, chemistry and maths. And I'm also a member of the Change Your Mind team.
Okay, well, thank you both for joining me. It's always, this is why we're teachers. It's always great to work with young people. So I look forward to unpicking your brains and hearing your thoughts in a moment. We've also got Sophie McPhee. Sophie, could you introduce yourself? It's nice to catch up with you again.
Yeah, nice to speak to you too, Ross. I'm Sophie McPhee. I'm the PSHE coordinator. I'm programme director for Change Your Mind. I oversee the school's Mental Health Awareness Week and also the school council, and I'm an assistant head of year.
And juggling lots of hats, but a person juggling more hats, Richard Langton. Richard, good afternoon. How are you, the head teacher?
Yeah, good afternoon, Ross. I'm well, thank you.
Richard, just for a background, could you tell listeners how long you've been at Queen Mary's, how long in the role of head teacher?
So I've been at the school for 11 years. I'm just coming up to 4 years as head. I'm glad to speak to you this afternoon and give you an update, because mental health and wellbeing has been absolutely front and centre of my leadership of the school, and it's good to catch up and reflect upon where we've been over the last
year. Yeah, I think one thing that still resonates with me, of all the schools that have been on my travels, you know, when I first came to unpick some of the work that you did, one comment that really sticks out for me, Richard, was that mental health isn't a tick box exercise for you. And just unpicking the summary of the research that I conducted, you know, it was some of the kind of key things that you said was that leadership's a priority across the school, mental health projects are embedded across the curriculum, you know, workload, stress, mental health is acted upon. So I'll be interested to know how this has unfolded the last couple of years. Your working party, your school visits, your staff training. And then you also talked about some recommendations, which I'll come back to in a moment. But Richard, I'll start with you. I suspect it's been a challenge the last couple of years, but, you know, give us a kind of little synopsis summary of the last couple of years.
Okay. I suppose starting in the last couple of years, 2 years ago, we were down in London for your book launch in 2019, and didn't really foresee ahead of us what was coming. Mm-hmm. The February of 2020, I suppose we were one of the first schools caught up in the storm around coronavirus with a ski trip in Italy. And very soon afterwards, obviously, the nation caught up with that. I think it's very difficult to put into words how it felt to lead a school in the remainder of the academic year 1920. But credit to everybody involved in the school, staff and students, for pulling together and supporting each other. Last year was tough. And dealing with the changes in restrictions, etc. But what remained consistent throughout all of that was that sense of spirit and support within the community. We were delighted to open our student welfare hub in September 2020, and that began to do some great work last year. And we're really seeing, with the removal of bubbles this year, the potential that that has to bring people together and give a real focal point in the school for wellbeing.
So tell me a little bit more about the welfare hub, you know, people inside, the kind of things that it's, it offers to the community or to your students.
So we brought together effectively our SEMH and SEND teams, who had expanded over time but actually were relatively spread out around the school and didn't necessarily have a common identity. So we brought them together in a new facility that has a student services reception, has facility for first aid and students who are unwell, has the SEMD team based in there. Our student counsellors are based up in the welfare hub, so they've got counselling rooms, meeting rooms. There's a large open plan space for running our nurture group sessions and other other sessions within the teams. And the assistant heads in charge of vulnerable learners and safeguarding are based in the hub too.
So is it a new facility, or you've just reorganised your current building structures?
It's a conversion of a previous facility, so that had come to the end of its life cycle, and we wanted to we were looking to make this facility and had a permission to make the financial investment into it.
Fantastic. So for people listening outside of the UK, just for clarity, SEMH stands for Social Emotional Mental Health, and SEND, definition, Special Educational Needs and Disabilities. Sophie, if I can bring you in for a moment, tell us, you know, your perspective last couple of years, you know, all the work that I know that you've done. Could you just give us a bit of a challenging question, but a general synopsis in terms of before the pandemic, how they've been used, and emerging successes, emerging issues?
So I think one of the things that I wanted to add on to what Richard was saying about the last couple of years is that one of the things that I'm sure many, many schools did is that our designated safeguarding lead coordinated regular welfare checks. And there were many staff that took part in that, telephone calls home to check in with particularly vulnerable learners, but there were also sort of phone calls that were done across whole form groups. In terms of what my particular roles, obviously, like other members of staff, I learned how to deliver sessions online, but with PSHE, of course, there's certain sessions that you can't deliver because of the sensitive nature of them. So there is obviously a catching up to do there. But it's really brought home to me, and I say this during my Change Your Mind induction training for other secondary schools and colleges, that we never know what's around the corner. And so it's really emphasised more than ever the importance of mental health, because we never know when something is going to shake our world, as it were, you know, shake the foundations of our world, and whether it be on a personal level or like this, a global level. So we want our mental health to be in the best place it can be, so that we're in the best position to deal with it when something does unfortunately inevitably come along.
Sure. And I go back to something that I had a conversation with Richard about, you know, when I first came in, you know, that, you know, the general perception with the public, you know, even teachers within the teaching profession, the perception of a grammar school, you know, you're still working with young people and you still have to manage, we all need to manage our mental health. And that still resonates with me from my particular visit. And one thing that I was really impressed with was, you know, it's not only some of the recommendations, you know, that you survey, you know, you survey staff and students on a regular basis. You've got a hierarchy of audience, you know, established partnerships, And you do this free training, and we'll move into, you know, change your mind in a moment. But you know, you make this explicit throughout the curriculum. You turn every stone, so to speak. Have those things that you had in place put you in a good position? You know, the pandemic's been a challenge for us all, but do you think those structural things you had in place, there's a question to Richard or Sophie, I suppose, put you in a good position to manage, apart from the technicalities of managing Zoom lessons, do you think the mental health approach you had you in a better position to deal with the pandemic?
I think so, to a certain extent, because I think that people were in the habit of speaking up and being able to know that talking wasn't a sign of weakness, and that support network was there. And I think that what Sophie mentioned about the safe and well calls, and particularly I'm thinking in the January to March period of this year, of 21, there was no issue with staff signing up to do those. People wanted to do their bit. And I think the feedback that we had from parents and students and staff around how we dealt with all of that was absolutely fantastic. And I think part of it was that spirit of helping each other and being part of a community. So, yes, I think that what we put the foundations down for over the last few years certainly helped us with that. I never felt that I had to coerce people into doing anything. It was part of a bigger effort of...
And a year since you've launched the Welfare Hub, Richard, what kind of impact is that now having in this kind of second academic year for you?
It's very difficult to quantify. I think that I suppose you've got to be in there to see the impact of it, because I think that the busyness of it, the way in which students have taken to it, the staff are providing support all day long, and new roles that were created that didn't even exist 2 years ago are already at capacity, whereby senior leaders are coming to me saying we need more of this support. And we weren't even talking about those roles 2 years ago. So I think it's enabled us to highlight things and give people confidence to be able to come forward with issues that they may be going through, however minor. And I think that's a good thing, because that talking about mental health and well-being encourages people to come forward with things at a formative stage, rather than at a point where actually you're dealing with things at a level that we can't cope with within school. So I think that's a good sign. So the busyness of the Welfare Hub, from a student and a staff perspective actually, but certainly from a student perspective, it's a real indication of how it's gone down within the school community.
That's good. That's good. The good news, and like you said, it's early days, but you know, the busyness is a real good indicator. Sophie, if I bring you in a moment, could you tell people that don't know what Change Your Minds is?
Yeah, sure. So Change Your Mind was established in 2016. Originally, it was as a project entry to a competition about mental health. And it was set up by 4 year 12 students with my supervision, where we sent them out into 6 primary schools to deliver workshops on digital detoxing and transition to secondary school. In the following year, because, like you said, like we've said before, mental health is not a tick box exercise, we wanted to continue that. We started going out into more primary schools. And in the third year, we actually made it a timetabled part of our enrichment programme for year 12. Then in 2019, I started going out to other secondary schools and colleges to help them set up the programme. And it's now in its 6th year, I think it is. And we've actually got about 90 schools and colleges across the UK that have done the training and are implementing the programme.
That's fantastic. So you're well beyond the bubble of Walsall, so to speak. You're really making a big impact now, aren't you?
Yeah, so this academic, so up to the end of the summer, last academic year, we were in England and Wales. And this term we've expanded out into Scotland. And a really exciting thing is that I will be inducting our first school in Northern Ireland on Thursday at a webinar, but right. I'm also flying out to Belfast in April.
Oh, exciting.
The school in Belfast set up the programme.
That's great. So if I bring Suzanne in, our Year 12 student, and Samrad, give us your perspective on Change Your Mind, what the kind of things you do and how you're involved. Suzanne?
So I'm a sub-team leader, so usually there's six of us in a team, and each of us make a presentation. So our team is first aid, so I think someone did a presentation on choking, someone did what to do in an emergency, and I'm doing allergic reactions. Mm-hmm. And then I put them together, and then we go out into primary schools, and three of us deliver two workshops each.
And right, fantastic.
Yeah.
And what's it like visiting other schools and having that responsibility to share, crucial information with, primary teachers as well as primary students?
I think at the start it was quite nerve-wracking because I didn't really know what to expect. But then after our first workshop, I realised that it's not that bad because children are quite, curious, and they want to learn. They ask lots and lots of questions. Mm-hmm.
So you've done it a few times now. I guess you're a bit more confident.
Yeah, I've done it twice now.
Great. And Samrad, how about you? What's your role?
I'm part of the team which is transitioning to secondary school, so there's like different subtopics in that. My subtopic is time management, so I deliver a PowerPoint on how to improve time management, especially when you go into secondary school and you might get more tasks and more responsibility. And there's also other topics like how to keep your nutrition and how to live life to the full and make sure you're taking advantage of all opportunities. But I think the good thing about Change Your Mind is, although my PowerPoint is time management, we experience doing each other PowerPoint. So even though I made the time management PowerPoint, I also have a go at doing the other PowerPoint. So
we're
learning ourselves. Our goal is to teach primary school kids and raise awareness for mental health, but at the same time, we're teaching ourselves. So it's going hand in hand because we're improving their awareness about it. But then we also...
And how have you found, Samrad, the process of going into a school and presenting to teachers as well as primary students?
I think it's good when you're in front of the students, it's good because you're actually getting a gauge of what their mindset is and how they're approaching the situation, and then you can see that change over the course of the presentation. So you start having a conversation with them at the start, and then as they learn about what you're trying to tell them, you see how they're adapting to what you're saying, and it's good to see how they take on your information.
And Suzanne, how do you think it's helping with your own personal mental health, your own confidence, your presentation skills, your studies?
I've never really done anything quite creative before, so I think it gives us the creative freedom, because I think most people at the school, they do, most sixth formers, we all do STEM subjects, so it's good that we kind of get like a creative outlet to share our ideas.
And Samra, how about yourself?
Yeah, it's good. I think it's a good break, especially like it's very like active, like you're out there, you're talking to kids, and like you're not just like, you're improving your own like confidence, especially as a teacher, with things like interviews and interacting with people on a daily basis in a workplace. I think it's good having that collaboration in the team, and then also being able to get your ideas across to like students of different ages. So having really complex information, but then being able to simplify it and make
sure. Samra, do you see those skills that you've learned from Change Your Mind that you can use them in your A-level studies?
Yeah, so in terms of like when I'm researching things for time management, obviously, I find information that might be like really detailed or really complex, but then learning how to make that more condensed and then putting it into your own words and then getting that in a way that's interactive, like not just throwing information at a student, like a lecture style, being able to be interactive and introduce activities to then make them engage and actually understand it from a different point of view instead of just reading from a slide, maybe having like activities.
Sure. And Suzanne, have you both presented in front of the whole year, your whole sixth form?
I presented in front of our class.
So not the whole year group, just yet? And what's Miss McPhee like as a boss, Suzanne?
That's a
good
question, Ross.
So Sophie, tell us a bit more about, you mentioned the number of students, the specifics. Yeah. Where is all this going? What's the kind of long-term ambition?
We've expanded within our own school as well. We started out with four students, as you know, but we had about 27, 28 last year. We've actually got 30, we're supposed to have 36, we've actually got 39 on the programme now. So it's expanded within our school. We've expanded out to include a new workshop this year. So we have a suite of five workshops that we offer. We did do, but we've introduced a sixth this year. So we teach basic first aid, which is obviously physical health rather than mental, transition to secondary school, relationships, health and development, digital detoxing. And we've also got our new sixth workshop, diversity, equity and inclusion. So we're responsive to things that are happening on a national and a global scale. So this was born of our response to the Black Lives Matter movement and the Sarah Everard and similar cases, and also my own increasing awareness of disability issues, for example, and also to meet the key stage two requirements for relationships and health education as well.
Sure.
It takes some time, as it were.
Give me a sense of how other staff are involved within your school, parents and, you know, your governors also.
To be honest with you, it's more or less running as a kind of one-man band, really. So that we do, I do have a lot of support, obviously, from staff in terms of a lot of support from Richard, for example, for making the part of my timetable available to join Change Your Mind. And that has had to increase as the years have gone by. And other sort of vocal support from staff as well. I have presented to the head teachers within our multi-academy trust, and we've got two other schools in our, one other school in our multi-academy trust that has adopted the programme, and one other school that may be adopting the programme. So the word is spreading about this. I just to go back to your previous question about where we go from here, my aim before the end of the academic year is to operate in every English and Welsh local education authority. It's quite a big ambition.
Yeah, it's a great ambition.
Yeah, and also because I've now already met the goal of expanding into Scotland and Northern Ireland, I'd love an English language international school to take on the programme. What just one by the end of the year would be great.
Great. I'll bring Richard in for any thoughts on how you see this particular project expanding, you know, without it impinging on Sophie's time and her expertise in your school, but the benefits also for your school kudos and reputation, etc. Any thoughts?
I've always been a big supporter of it, and I think we're in the second year, Sophie will maybe correct me, where actually time on the timetable is allocated to the external delivery of this. With the school, so absolutely support it, and will do so going forward, and I'm happy to have conversations around sort of balancing out directed teaching time for PSHE on the curriculum, etc. But I think it's a fantastic thing for Sophie to be involved, for the school to be involved with, and for our students clearly to be benefiting from delivering that to other schools. I think it's
On that note, please, Sophie, go on.
One more thing, if you don't mind. That another facet to the programme is that the students can, if you like, customise their experience in the sense that there are other opportunities available that they can sign up for, this podcast being one of them. We have students that are acting as mentors, behaviour mentors to students lower down the school, year eight. We have pupils that might write a blog or create a video for our website. Might represent Change Your Mind at events. We were invited, for example, to the School and Public Health Nurses Association annual conference back in January. So there's lots of other ways in which students can volunteer to help promote Change Your Mind, yes, but increase their employability skills.
So you mentioned you've got 39 student leaders at the moment.
Yes. If you like, Change Your Mind ambassadors, if you like.
Change Your Mind ambassadors. And is there, you know, in year three, I suppose, are you expecting, as your school numbers increase, you would have to increase that capacity?
I think the initiative is running on its own steam now, in the sense that it's a known entity within our school. The logo, I think, is well known, and you know, this year at our year 12 induction fair was the first year where I've had to run off to go and fetch photocopy some more application forms, you know, because we have so much interest. So I do foresee that we expand, and this will inevitably mean that we need to expand our delivery of other topics that we don't yet cover. such as body.
So remind people listening on this podcast, you've got your different themes: transition, digital detox, relationships, diversity, inclusion, first aid. I think I've missed one. What was the other one?
Health and development.
Health and development. So if I come back to Suzanne, what are the kind of first aid things that you share in your PowerPoint when you're presenting to primary students?
CPR, choking, allergic reactions, what to do in an emergency, and asthma.
And I'm assuming you've learned lots actually yourself, and you've had to be, you know, factually correct with your information.
Yeah, so all of the information I usually source from the NHS website or reliable sources.
So CPR, choking, allergic reactions. What was the fourth one you mentioned?
Asthma.
Asthma.
Yeah.
Tell me the kind of what you do, Suzanne, when you're in a primary school. So you got your PowerPoint on and you talk it through, or are you doing some demonstrations, you're giving out handouts?
So yeah, most of us in the first aid team, we've been trained, we've got the first aid qualification. So we usually teach the children by, like, we ask for volunteers and demonstrations, and we demonstrate on each other. And it's very interactive. And we use a PowerPoint, and we read through the PowerPoint and ask lots of questions, quizzes, and I think most of it's down to the demonstrations.
Great. And Samra, do you? I guess I was going to ask you for some time management tips. We all want to save a bit of time. So, what are your recommendations here?
I think one of the main ones that I stick by and it's helped me is, especially if you have a lot of things happening in your timetables, I guess doing a little bit often, and I've also found doing little but often instead of doing massive, if you've done everything in just 1 5-hour session, if you've done half an hour every day, not only will it make your time more free, but I think it improves your memory. I found that doing little bits every day will help build that up in your memory. So if you're revising for a test, if you're doing little bits every day, over time you remember it more than cramming or just day.
Yeah. And what's your advice, Samrad, for we're all victim to a bit of social media and being on your phones too much? Any recommendations for adults as well as young people?
I think the easiest one that people say is just turn off your phone. But even then, now there's apps on the App Store where you can have a 20-minute focus period, and then and you can have different apps that can help you keep focused. So I think it's important to incorporate breaks, because if you're just doing long sessions, you're making it unrealistic. You're going to be more likely to just pick up your phone and then
Start being productive. And you mentioned also you do nutrition as well. So what kind of key things do you share with primary students?
You kind of give an overall feedback about how important not only nutrition is, physically, obviously in a crucial time of growth, if you're going from that age, especially with puberty and things, but also that nutrition can also affect your mental health as well. So just certain foods that if you're just overeating, everything is meant to be had in moderation. So it's important to know about the healthy foods, but also it's not bad to also have a little treat here and then, because then it becomes, like I said, it becomes unsustainable. So if you're just trying to eat just healthy foods, you're not giving yourself
a bit of balance.
Yeah,
Suzanne, so I guess you know you've got your A levels to manage, you've got you're doing change of mind as our enrichment pathway also. That difficult question that you hear a lot at your age, and we often struggle with this as adults too, but what do you want to do when you're a bit older, your kind of studies or career path?
I want to go into medicine, and that's why I chose first aid.
And do you think the change of your mind has inspired that particular journey for you?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's lots I can talk about at interviews, my personal statement. And it's taught me lots of empathy skills when seeing the primary school children. And obviously first aid links quite nicely with medicine. So it gives you a bit of experience.
Yeah, I bet you've got a lot to write about in your application form now, haven't you? Yeah, and how about you, Samrad?
Interested in potentially medicine, but also anything a degree related in science. And I think especially a change of mind, having that collaboration and stuff, if you're going to become a doctor involved in workplaces like a hospital, it's important that you have that sort of collaboration and being able to be responsible, meeting deadlines for the presentations and things like that. I think those are skills. that you can talk
about. And Samrad, what would be your advice to if there was a 17 or 18 year old listening to this podcast and they weren't sure or they're lacking a little bit of confidence? What advice would you give them for if there was something similar in their school that they weren't sure about getting involved with? What would you recommend?
I think the best thing to do is to always try it, because I find that especially when you step outside your comfort zone, a lot of people also like fear like trying something because they think they might not be good at it. But then when you put yourself out your comfort zone, that's when you really get to like see that you learn a lot about yourself, about like your resilience and your dedication. Mm-hmm. How you can perform under pressure. And I think realising that at a young age helps you to build a lot of skills, and it makes you more tailored to what you like in the future. So I think trying everything that you can at a young age and getting a taste for everything is the best thing. Especially
great, good tip. And Suzanne, can I maybe unpick, before you started Change Your Mind, were you a bit nervous of doing something and now you're a lot more confident? Have you got an example, you know, whether it was public speaking or something like that? Can you give an example of where you're a bit shy of something in particular beforehand and how Change Your Mind has boosted your confidence or a particular skill?
I was always really nervous when public speaking, but now I think I've gotten a bit better because it's a very useful skill to have, especially in adulthood.
So I hope to hear Miss McPhee tell me that you've both spoken in front of the whole year group by the end of the year. That would be a great success, Suzanne and Samrad. So it's been really interesting to hear your story, so thank you. Sophie, if I ask you that question, how can schools get involved, what would you say to teachers and schools listening?
So obviously we welcome any school or college that would like to get involved. My email address is changeyourmind, as all one word, at QMGS for Queen Mary's Grammar School walsall.sch.uk. We also have a website, qmgschangeyourmind.wordpress.com, and we also are active on Twitter as well at qmgs_cym.
So we're recording this at the end of the 2021, end of the year. We're still a couple of terms to go for this academic year. Sophie, what be hoping for? You mentioned you've got 90 schools and you want to get into every LEA in the future, but what would be a realistic kind of jump up that you'd be really happy with more schools getting in touch with you? September 2022.
Yeah, so I run one webinar a month and we have between 7 and 10 schools per webinar, and I'm also going out to various places. I'm going to Durham, I'm going to Manchester, Belfast, as I've mentioned. So I think realistically, I mean, by the end of the year, I'd love to exceed 150, to be honest with you. But
That last final question, I suppose, is you mentioned going to school in Northern Ireland and getting them set up. What happens in that process? So for schools listening out there, and in terms of commitments, resources, you know, people involved, what's that method?
Yeah, okay. So when I go out to do in-house training, I spend a day with the pupils. That would be a minimum of 6 pupils, a maximum probably of around 36. And we spend the first part of the day, the first part of the morning, I introduce them to the programme and the history of it and what it involves. The second half of the morning, pupils are allocated what we call a 10-minute session, which is a workshop segment. Uh-huh. And they start creating either alone or in pairs or in threes. And I go round and give feedback to them on that. And also I train the member of staff in how to run the programme, the practical aspects. And then after the lunch break, we have as many pupils as possible rehearse their 10-minute session, their workshop segment, and the member of staff that I'm with and I give them feedback. So potentially by the end of the day, they're actually ready to go out into primary schools. Mm-hmm. And the schools and colleges themselves, they get access to the digital Change Your Mind handbook, which is my guidance for staff on how to run the programme. They have personalised certificates that have been created by a professional graphic designer. They have sample award coins that we use, and also a team badge for each pupil taking part in the programme, and your book as well, Ross.
Oh, that's very nice. I need to post your copy of my new book, so I'll sort that out after we finish to support with your kind of retrieval space practice type culture. But I guess that awkward question, is there a cost involved, or is it literally a commitment and time on the school's part?
Obviously, there's cost involved to have the induction. The webinar is obviously the cheaper option, and you don't get all of the freebies. You do get access to the handbook. The in-house training is, of course, a more expensive option because we have to pay for my time. In terms of actually once you've had the induction training, the cost really, again, is flexible. The really great thing about Change Your Mind is how flexible it is. So I talk to staff during the training about how you can customise your Change Your Mind, the bolt-ons that you can have, the things you're allowed to leave out. So it's your option, really, whether you purchase the team badges and the award coins and so on. And I go through all of that with the members of staff.
I mean, it sounds fantastic. You know, I think from when I visited 2018-19 for the Just Great Teaching, obviously I came before as part of your Mental Health Awareness Week. It seems to me that you've definitely, you know, obviously COVID challenges aside, this project's becoming enormous and really, really thriving. Would I be correct to say that?
Oh, yes, it's taken off far more than I had ever realised it would. I sort of somehow came up with the idea of going out into one school in October 2019, which was the first school in Northampton, not far from here. And then, of course, in sort of 2020, 2021, when a lot of people were at home, there were lots of schools signing up to webinars. And it really expanded.
And I think, you know, the credit there, you know, talking to Suzanne and Samrad about the impact that it has on them and the difference that they're also making and the inspiration that the kind of project gives to them for their future and, you know, their application in terms of, you know, job pursuits and things like that. It's just fantastic. And I guess we shouldn't forget that the wonderful wisdom and support from Richard behind the scenes to help you get all this off the ground. Rich, I'm going to come to you just to finish, I suppose, in terms of some words of wisdom. And I guess my last question is, you know, what kind of legacy and impact do you want all this to have, you know, for the long term, I suppose?
That's a really difficult question. I think sort of beyond my headship, I want to leave behind a school that has a real sense of togetherness and community about it, and well-being is at the heart of that. And I think that things like the Welfare Hub are a physical representation of that, but I think it's more than that. I think it's about a culture, and I think this helps to foster that culture amongst the students and staff. And I think that's really what I want to leave behind, a culture of caring and well-being.
So there you go, folks. What a great conversation. And Suzanne Samrad, thank you so much. It's always great to talk with students. And thank you so much for both of you stepping up to do this. I hope you've enjoyed the process. And I hope you enjoy listening back to it. And I hope also, Sophie, that you get lots of schools getting in touch with you. And I'll certainly support you in trying to get a Change Your Mind school in every local authority and do what I can there. So I'm conscious of time. The school bells are about to ring on your side, I'm sure. But thank you to everyone. Thank you, Richard, for all the amazing work you do to keep your school thriving throughout this difficult time. To everyone listening, this is the fabulous Queen Mary Grammar School in Walsall. Do go and visit, do check out the resources, do check out the website links mentioned in the podcast. And to you guys, thank you so much for your time, and I hope to see you soon.
Thank you, Ross.
Thank you.
Thanks, Suzanne. Thanks, Samrad.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.